Now, I really believe that those Christians should be encouraged to exercise their senses, but they might find a better practice area. Is that all right? Or more sympathetic people to be around during the practice when they're really hitting the sour ones. I'd like to tell you something else about exercise. You can take it or leave it. I was trained to play the trombone by J.B. Vanderwerker, who was the last of the great bandmasters. J.B. played under John Philip Sousa and all these fellas. He was a gray-haired fellow with a mustache, and he was a stiff ramrod of a bandmaster. And back then, I was in what we called the Newsboys Band in Indianapolis, Indiana. In order to join the Newsboys Band, which was one of the last parade bands that was sponsored by any of the newspapers. How many have heard of the Washington Post March? The Washington Post, have you heard that? That's because it was the Washington Post. The Washington Post had a band, and the band was made up of its news carriers, and they would come down and learn to play the horns. J.B. Vanderwerker taught me how to play the trombone. One day I was in there, and I was really lousing it up. I'll tell you, I was giving it the old razzmatazz. I had a couple of raspberries in there, and I was really doing some lousy work. He walked up to me, and he said, "David Ebaugh." I said, "What?" He said, "Are you practicing?" And I said, "Yes, sir." He said, "Don't ever let me hear you practice that way again." I said, "What's wrong? I'm just nobody around. I'm just fooling around." He said, "Every time you pick up that horn, you play to 1,000 people." I'll always remember that. Every time you pick up that horn and put that horn to your lips, put it in your mind that you're playing to 1,000 people. I paid attention to that, and in a year I was what they call the trombone virtuoso. Virtuoso, and I was playing at the state fair in Indiana, which is, I don't know whether you know it, but that's a big state fair, and we had hundreds and thousands of people out there in the audience. Yeah, but when you're practicing, practice as though the whole world is watching you. Practice as though you mean it. Are you with me on this? Don't remember anything else that J.B. said, but I can remember that. And he was probably a grand bandmaster. And sometimes I count my blessings, and certainly that was one of the blessings that I learned years ago. That when you're practicing, practice as though your whole career depended on that performance. Now, when you goof it up, be willing to goof. Be willing to realize that in a practice session, that's what it's for. You learn the skill. You learn to move according to the notes that have been set before you. But when you're out before the audience, have enough practice under your belt so that you can go through it perfectly. And I'd like to submit another thing for your analysis. I personally found in my trombone playing that my real superiority came when I got away from the notes. The notes are there to learn the song, to learn how it should be played. After you learn, after you've got the idea the way the author wanted it, put that music away. Now, that might not make sense to you until you understand that one of the ways in teaching and prophesying in the Bible is to know the notes, know what the author said, be familiar with the way he wanted it, but be able to refer to these by having them way over there. In other words, there's something about being really familiar with your material. When you're performing before a group of people in prophecy, they want to know that you've been over those scales before. Have you been in a meeting where someone was just learning to prophesy and you were kind of hoping they'd get over it? Come on now. Tell the truth now. Have you been where they would say things and it was pretty obvious that it was coming out of the soul and not the spirit? Well, now, what we want to do is encourage each other to continue, but I would encourage you to continue in private, small groups first. Don't go down to the full gospel businessmen's convention and start prophesying. There's going to be, 2,000 people there this September, something like that. Develop yourself, develop your techniques, develop your abilities prior to that by exercising your senses. Now, at this realm, some people deviate and say, Ebal, you're wrong, that's not spiritual, it cannot be spiritual. If you have to exercise your senses, that's not right. Well, I'm submitting for your analysis that that's what the Bible says to do in order to become a Helios, in order to become a son of God, in order to become manifest, in order to become expert, you must exercise your senses. Now, if you don't believe that, then explain to me why it was then when Saul went up to the school of the prophets, climbed the mountain, attended the school of the prophets, and came back down, Saul began to sing and prophesy. Wherefore, the saying went about, is Saul also numbered among the prophets? Bible students, am I telling the truth? Now, if Saul went to the school of the prophets, why would you have to go to a school if it's all spontaneous? Did you hear what I said? Prophecy is not spontaneous. It has a lot to do with whether you've been over this before. It has a lot to do, are you familiar with the writer? Or do you know what was in his mind when he wrote that score? Are you with me on this? Prophets also are singers, and it is possible to prophesy on a harp. The Bible teaches about those who prophesied on a harp. Remember? 1 Corinthians chapter 25, they prophesied on a harp. Therefore, it's proper to have music, prophecy in the realm of music. And I'm following these general rules so that you'll see that it is not a spontaneous thing, but it is a thing that is a learned activity. Isn't that what you go to school for? A learned activity. And how do you learn it? By exercising your senses. Is that what it said? Romans chapter 5. By the exercising of our senses. Now, in exercising of our senses, it means that finally we're able to perform, we're able to be the virtuoso, we're able to stand out in front of the crowd, and you exercise your senses. One other thing I found later on in playing the trombone was this. You can tell the grade of a trombone player by the angle at which he holds his horn. You watch and see now. You just watch the performers and see. The kids that are just learning, just holding it down like that. They're playing to the floor. And you watch a fellow who knows what he's doing. He's got that horn up like that, and it's a perfect horizontal. And he's playing to the whole crowd, and his horn's right out there, and he's got a touch. He doesn't have it held like that, and he's going up and down and playing to the floor. But he holds it up with a finesse, and he's holding his slide like here between these two fingers. Then you also notice a first chair. You can pick out a first chair. You can pick the first chair from the sixth chair in a band right like that. Because first chair is always straight out like this, and the sixth chair is down like this. Seems like the older the boys get, the more they're able to finally get it up there. And, of course, if you have a kid who's playing the trombone, the thing to do is to teach him to hold it up straight, because when they're playing in the bandmaster can't tell who's playing the worst notes. So he'll put him on the first chair if his horn is straight up, assuming that he's halfway decent. Some other things we found out. Now, in this realm, that doesn't sound right to you, because at another, that's, you say, what does that have to do with prophesying? Well, it's like this. When Joseph was called before Pharaoh, do you remember the story? Joseph was in the dungeon, had been in prison for 15 years, serving a sentence for attempted rape, convicted attempted rapist, 15 years in prison, when he's called up before the king of the world, the Pharaoh. The Bible tells us that Joseph shaved himself, took a bath, put on good clothes, put on a robe. For you see, you project an image. Did you know that? And you project an image of a prophet. I don't know whether you remember fellow who came to the full gospel a few years ago and didn't have a very good image. And we couldn't hear his prophecy because his image wasn't right. You remember that fellow? Yeah? All right. You couldn't hear him because of his image. When Joseph went before the Pharaoh, he shaved. Why would he shave? Well, first you have to have a little bit of history. Only the Pharaoh and the priests were shaved. All the others wore beards. So when he appeared before the Pharaoh, he appeared as a priest, as a learned man. Have you seen pictures of pharaohs with a square thing that sticks out of their chin? The funniest looking beard you ever saw? Have you seen those? You wondered why they did that? Actually, technically, what they did is when the Pharaoh appeared in public, he wore a leather pouch strapped to his chin, and it was a square leather pouch, which was a false beard. I almost said the wrong word. And I decided not to. But, but it was the false beard because he was up in public and he wanted to appear dressed and so forth. But it was obvious that he hadn't a beard. It was obvious that he was shaved. And so Joseph shaved himself to project an image of a prophet. And I think it behooves us to also remember that when we're in this realm, that there is an image involved. That there is an image involved. The Bible teaches us that when Jesus was in Nazareth, he could not do many works there because of their unbelief. Bible students. Now, why is this? Basically, at hometown, your image isn't as great. You know that, don't you? When you're with your neighbors and people you've grown up with, you have a lesser image because of your history. You follow that? Well, let me try it another way. Yesterday, I was in Miami. Hundreds of people drove hundreds of miles to hear me teach. Tonight I'm in Harrisburg. Point made? See what I'm talking about? When we write letters to Illinois, there'll be 450 people crowding out that church in Illinois. Because in Harrisburg, a prophet is not without honor except where he lives. Isn't that what Jesus said? Where he lives. So where you live, you don't have the same image. In Harrisburg, one lady came up to the house a while back. She drove up, got out of the car, and I was carrying out the garbage. She jumped back and says, "What? Does the prophet carry out the garbage?" It was kind of a joke, but you see the idea that over in Illinois, they don't think in terms of a garbage man.
Supposing him to have been the
gardener. are you following what I'm saying in this realm? And so you have to go down the street. And your image at home just isn't the same as when you're down the street. So remember that. And I just might as well warn you, as you begin to exercise in the realm of prophecy, as prophets or prophetesses, that you won't get away with it at home. Even Jesus Christ, the Son of God, couldn't get away with it at home. Is anybody mad at that? It doesn't work that way. We're dealing with psychology. We're dealing with the human psyche. We're dealing with the human mind. And Jesus said he knew what was in man. He understood man, and he dealt with it. Joseph understood man, and he dealt with it. Elijah understood men, and he built the school of the prophets. And people went to the school of the prophets to learn how to prophesy because of the way man is. And one of the situations is the image you project. So in this realm, have you noticed that some Bible teachers, some preachers, when they come into the big meetings, they come in with a flourish? Have you seen that? They will not be seen in front of the meeting until it's exactly the right time. Have you noticed? They'll walk in with a flourish and a flare. They'll grab the microphone, do their thing, do a soft shoe or two, and you know, whatever the thing is. Then after the meeting, what do? Disappear. Have you noticed that? Complete disappearing. Because they're projecting a image. They'd prefer that you didn't see them in any other setting except in an aggressive, forceful microphone platform setting. Have you seen it? In this realm, I'm not finding fault with those people. I don't mean to say that there's anything wrong with these guys. Yesterday morning, when I went into the Lutheran church, I went in with a flare and a flourish. I turned around to look for the trumpets. Because this is what they were expecting. This is the way, this is what they were looking for. They were looking for this image. So when you're in that kind of an environment, there's nothing wrong with projecting an image. I personally have gone beyond the realm of meaning an image for myself. But I don't object when I'm in a situation to play the role. Is that all right? I just realize it's part of the role you have to play. It's part of the price you have to pay in order, to have that ministry. So I'm not objecting to it, though I can see, and you can see, I hope by now, that you won't need that. By now, you'll be able to recognize a prophet that's on the roof. Someday I'm going to write a book. The title is, There's a Prophet on the Roof. It all started a while back when I was out on the roof in my dirty overalls with a tar bucket, daubing tar on, trying to find the leak, when the phone rang. Somebody yelled at the window, "Hey, somebody wants to talk to the prophet." So, with my tarry hands, I barely able to pick up, held the phone like this, and somebody wanted a vision or a prophecy about some particular thing of their life. And I thought, this should be written up. People ought to know about the prophet. There's a prophet on the roof. Well, you can have a fiddler on the roof and a cat on the roof. Maybe a prophet on the roof would be all right. Because I realized, had the person who was on the other end of that telephone been able to see me in my dirty overalls, my tar hand, filled hand, splattered with black marks all over me, perhaps the prophecy might not have meant so much to that folk, to that one. I'm submitting all these things for analysis to show you that many things the prophets deal with are in the realm of the soul. And they have their senses exercised. Now, the word senses has to do with the soul. Are you hearing this? And they have their senses exercised that they might know the difference between good and evil. There's nothing wrong with exercising your senses so that you'll have know the difference. In this realm, I'm not suggesting that you play parlor games. However, if you want to, I won't object. That you get with some people, have some prayer, and see in a very private and closed meeting what the Lord would have for you to do as you are led by the Spirit and prophesy for someone else in a very closed, private, close affair. Like you did the first time you played the piano for somebody. It was very close, very few, rather private. Are you with me on this? Do you see what I'm doing here? Then, assuming that you exercise your senses, you discern the good from the bad, you know where you goofed, where you're right and wrong. You see, because prophets, when they're prophesying from the Lord, cannot prophesy through the mind. It's got to come up from the heart. It's got to come out of the inner man. It's got to come out of the spirit. You've heard me at times, I'm sure, say, I cannot remember that vision. How many have heard me say that? I cannot remember the vision I gave you. Years ago, I could. Now I can't. The reason for that is that when the vision comes up from the heart, you do your thinking in your heart. How to explain this? I'm at a loss of words. I don't know. The only thing I can tell you is you didn't explain how to your children how to walk. You just kind of fall into it. Is that right? And through experience, you learn to move this leg, to move that muscle, and those things will happen. But as a result of this, I'd like to point out to you that when you prophesy, it comes up from the heart. Now you have a choice as a prophet to filter it through the head and then out the mouth, or bring it from the heart to the mouth directly. When I see a vision and I call them like I see them, it's coming right out like this and going right out like this, and I'm not giving any analysis to that vision whatsoever. A day later, I cannot tell you what I've seen. There's no way for me to recall, because it did not go through the brain. It came up out of the heart. It went right out of the mouth. That's why Betty, when I start prophesying, she starts writing notes. Because if she doesn't get those notes down, even 2 minutes later, she'll have to remind me of what I said and the order in which I said it. Now, when she reminds me, it comes to the brain. You can understand that. And when it comes to the brain, then I can analyze it. Then I can work on it. Now, during this period, I have a very sensitive period, because I try to still let the spirit control and not my brain. I have given prophecies, and I'm looking over, though I'm not going to mention who I'm talking about, I have given prophecies in times past that came up out of the heart. Then they worked in my brain for a while. I modified them because I was scared that somebody would misunderstand the way it was. I fixed it up according to the circumstance as I understood it and gave it. And I can still remember those prophecies. Years and years ago. Now, through experience, I've discerned good from evil. Did you hear that? I don't do that anymore. I let her fly. It's been my personal experience in the realm of visions that I have never seen anything to embarrass anyone. I'd like to say that again. God is a lover, is that correct? And love covers, is that correct? How many understand what I'm talking about? And in this realm, I'm trying to be a lover, a channel of God's love. And God has never... You ought to see people start fidgeting when I tell them I have visions. Ooh. I wonder if he knows. And I'd like to say this. God does not let me in on any of your secrets as far as revealing something that would be an embarrassment to you. It's never happened in all these years. However, once in a while, when someone comes for counseling and tells me some very personal and private matters, then we do get into some things, and I say some things when the lid's already off. You can understand that. Still, it's very personal, private, and still hasn't been any embarrassment to the person because they took the lid off in the first place. But that would only be in that realm, you see. It's never happened to embarrass a person. No person that I know of has ever been embarrassed. Now, there were times in the past when I thought what I said would embarrass someone. But later on, I've just called them the way I see them and find out that that person, even in the public realm, has not been embarrassed. I'm thinking right now of Pam Foreman. What's his name? Keith Foreman. They came over for a word from the Lord for a prophecy. And I'm not able at this point to exactly explain what went on. I think my wife could tell you. What did I tell them? Oh, you don't, well, you may know more about it. Do you remember anything about that prophecy? She was concerned about, she's married to Keith, and she was concerned about pregnancy and whether she would be or that kind of thing. There was a thing there on it, see? And she wasn't. You remember the story? Yeah, a little corduroy jacket on the line, which would indicate there was going to be a baby. This seemed to give Keith a settling idea, and he was satisfied it was God's will. And sure enough, very shortly thereafter, she made her announcement. Then the doctor got in on the scene and scared her to death. Told her all kinds of things and the possibilities of losing the baby and losing her life and, oh, you know, just scared her to death of all the things. And they came over again for a confirmation. But, you know, they held on to that vision during the time when it seemed the world was against them. You follow what I'm driving at? It seemed that the doctors here in Hershey had decided she was going to lose the baby and told her so. Now, I don't know how it is with you ladies, but if you're carrying a baby and the doctor says you're going to lose it, it appears to me you'd be kind of frantic. And she was. But did God give a vision through a prophet that there would be some baby clothes hanging on the line? Now she has to make a decision. What'll I believe? Well, all that's natural would say, get upset, get ready, buy a lot in the cemetery, you know, assuming that it's past certain age and so forth, because this is the way it's going to go. But the word of the Lord said there's going to be baby clothes hanging on a clothesline. And it gave them peace. It gave them something that they could hang on to during a time when all hell was falling all around them. And it's been my history, so far at least, that these visions give somebody something to hold on to. It gives you something to get through it with. When the world would put you down, kill you, or your baby. You got something to hold on to get through it. And they got through it. Things are all right now. And there are baby clothes hanging on the clothesline. I give that example as a kind of a prophecy that you can hold on to during times when it seems everything is against you and the prophecy is wrong. In fact, Keith came over to me one day, and he just wanted to have a man-to-man talk. He says, now, brother, I'm not calling you a false prophet, but the doctor says, well, what do you do in a case like that? The doctor says this, I didn't make up the visions. Now I just call them as I see them. So I had to encourage him, give him a few words of faith, and help him to grab a hold again of the word of the Lord. But he can tell you the next story that I want to make clear in regard to instructive prophecy. Now, the kind of prophecy that I just told you is a wonderful type, helpful during the times when things are wrong. But wouldn't you rather have a directive prophecy? A prophecy that says, do this, don't do that. Some kind of an instructive or directive prophecy that'll cause you to take an act or to refrain from something. Do you follow that? Isn't that good? Betty, you tell them the story of a directive prophecy, a recent one. Harry and Barbara
tormenting itch.
I'm getting the mic closer.
Very much of a problem to her, and she had it several months. And Harry and Barbara came over one night and prayed. And didn't talk to David about the problem.
We asked them not to.
David didn't know whether it was a financial problem or a physical problem.
We only knew they asked for
one of their kids
for
had
a vision.
Problem they didn't know about. And so David began having a series of visions, and I can't even remember all that he had.
Can't even.
One thing was an old-fashioned push lawnmower. So after he was through and he said the spirit lifted and we started talking about what he'd seen, she'd gone through a diet change and she had started eating cashew nuts, raw cashew nuts, and by handfuls, just really craved them and ate a lot. So they decided that this was the what she has changed in her diet, what she should go back to the old-fashioned way of eating.
On the basis of the vision, it indicated the cashew nuts, or indicated the change.
So she called me yesterday before she left town. Oh,
wait a minute. There's a couple points she doesn't know what I'm headed for, so let me just interject this thought. She had written in her Bible a vision that I'd given to her several months before of cashew nuts. Go ahead.
So she called and said that the rash is going away. She's much better. Several parts of her body, the rash has dried up altogether. The itch is much less. She can stand herself now.
There's an example of a directive prophecy, a vision that would help you to decide what to do. And in her case, it was to refrain from cashew nuts. Now tell them what you said about the cashew nut.
Well, she looked it up in the encyclopedia and said the cashew nut is in a tree shell. And in order to get to the nut, you have to break three shells away. The first shell and the third shell are very brittle. And the second or intermediary shell is soft and filled with a black oil that's acrid. When it's roasted, the black oil is totally destroyed. So when she was eating raw cashew nuts, she was getting some of the intermediary shell oil. If she would eat roasted nuts, probably would bother her, but it would be a long time, I'll bet, before she tried roasted nuts.
So this acidy oil had to have been the cause. She'd been to the doctor. They were ready to go through the, you know, allergy test. They'd have never found that one. I can't remember all the details of the prophecy, but it was because of the details of the prophecy that we were able to sit together then and talk and figure out it was the cashew nuts. And then when we said it was the cashew nuts, she nearly jumped out of her skin because she got it. She went back to the old prophecy that we'd given long before. And several months before, it might have been that I gave her that prophecy when she first started eating them. I don't know. But she had it written down, and sure enough, there it was, cashew nuts. And she's eating raw cashews, and she analyzed the start of her trouble was the very time that she had started buying those several months before. Well, that, I just want to give you that as an example there, and also as a faith builder, because over the years, these things have happened so often that now I'm not scared of it. When I first started, I was scared. But now it's just past now. I'm just absolutely convinced, just not trying to be smart aleck, but to project an image of knowing what I'm doing. I've had those experiences, years of experiences in the realm of giving visions, and they've been 100% correct. However, when she first heard the visions, they didn't make any sense to her. They did not make any sense to her. Now, this is a very important thing. She wrote them down. She could not relate to those visions whatsoever. They were just completely foreign to anything in her life. then because of exercising our senses that we might know the difference between good and evil, we sat down and talked over the situation. Then she told me the problem was a rash. She told me some basic things about the problem, and based on the visions and the things that she said, because I have had the experience of exercising my senses, we could put it together, and she said, sure, that's what that means, that's what this means, it's the cashew nuts. But neither one of us could have done it by ourselves, if that makes sense. Now the next question is, if God is God, why doesn't he show me a picture of a cashew nut? If a lady comes up and that's what the trouble is, why didn't he show me the cashew nut? Now, I read in Numbers that the spirit is veiled. It's dark sayings. That's the way it is. Wouldn't it be neat if it was the other way? But that's not the way it is. So, all I can tell you is, this is the procedure God set up. This is the way he wanted it done. And we have absolutely no voice in the matter. We've got to go along with it the way God said to do it. I want you to pray with me right now that the Holy Spirit will reveal whatever very serious decisions and ideas and policies are being formulated in various lives. Thank you, Lord. In the lives of our friends, Lord, we love these friends. They've been very good to us. Even though a prophet is not without honor except in his own country, these have honored this ministry. And historically, there always have been those in the city and in the close family and friends who did bring honor to the prophet, even though in his own city he was rejected, and we realize those things. I'm not trying to change your patterns, Lord, but we're asking right now for a very special blessing upon these, our friends here in our city, these faithful that have brought us honor and taken care of us and honored us with gifts and tithes and offerings and honored us with their presence. We know, Lord, that there are lots of important things to do, and it's an honor to me just whenever anybody comes here, and I appreciate it. Because there are a lot of other things, important things and fun things for them to be doing. And they've chosen this, and chosen this channel. So, Lord, I pray that you'll use this channel right now as a channel blessing to these particular friends, these that have honored me. I pray that they'll get double honor back right now. Some special direction for various friends that are here tonight, especially in the realm of decisions, decision making.
For a free catalog of Bible teaching cassettes and books, send your name and address with zip code to David Ebar Bible School, 102 Park Terrace, Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, 17111.